Case Cleveland Rayford v. Wexford Health 10-1454. Mr. Kellogg, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Steve Kellogg and I represent Dr. Rayford in this appeal. This is a summary judgment case. It's not very complex. The issue before the court is whether the ignorance of an employment decision maker can shield a company from liability from discrimination. In this particular case, the district court agreed that Dr. Rayford had satisfied the McDonnell-Douglas indirect method of proving discrimination. He satisfied those first four factors. And so at that point, the burden of proof goes on to the defendant, the employer, to put forth a non-discriminatory reason why Dr. Rayford was not hired. In this particular case, though, the district court also agreed, through the presumptions of the summary judgment standards, that Wexford's stated reasons for not hiring Dr. Rayford were false. And it was at this point that we believed, Dr. Rayford believed, that the district court should have just simply denied Wexford's motion. It's pretty clear from the Seventh Circuit case law and even Supreme Court standards that satisfying the McDonnell-Douglas standard and establishing the falsity of an employer's explanation is alone enough to permit a jury to find intentional discrimination. In fact, the Seventh Circuit Court in Shager observed that if the only reason proffered by an employer is a lie, the inference is that the real one is a forbidden one may rationally be drawn. And that's the common sense standard of McDonnell-Douglas. In fact, Shager put it another way. They said that if there's an inference of improper motive, if that inference can be drawn, then there must be a trial. And that's why we thought, you know, at that point that we should have prevailed at the district court, because not only had we satisfied the first four elements, but we had also, through the presumptions of summary judgment, confirmed that Wexford's decision or that Wexford's justification was untrue. And so it was for a jury to determine whether or not that falsity is something that was hiding a discriminatory intent.
The problem is Wexford acted on incorrect information. If your guy was correct and he didn't badmouth Wexford, they had incorrect information. But you haven't shown that the incorrectness of that was based on some discriminatory reason. Gedman made a false report because.
Well, I don't think we have to. At least not at this stage.
If the employer acts on bad information, then it's presumed to be discriminatory?
No. The way that I read the case law is this, that if, in this particular case, Gedman, the district court agreed that her report of that telephone conversation was a lie, and then she transferred that lie onto the ultimate decision maker, which was Dr. Lundquist. Okay, Dr. Lundquist was unaware of the lie. Okay, but it was Dr. Lundquist, and so what the district court did was create a liability shield there. Okay, what they said was, well, even though Ms. Gedford, who is not inconsequential in this, she's the vice president of human resources for Wexford, the fact that she lied and passed that lie on to Dr. Lundquist, the Seventh Circuit is fairly clear on this, that her lie can be imputed to Dr. Lundquist, who made the ultimate decision. In other words, a company cannot set up these kind of artificial...
I'm with you all the way.
Okay.
If the reason for her lie is discriminatory.
Well, if we were required to do that, then that would eviscerate the indirect method of proof standard in McDonnell-Douglas. If we had proof that her intent was, in fact, discriminatory, then we wouldn't have to rely on the indirect method of proof. We would simply rely on the direct method of proof. And so that's why I think it's very important to understand that at the summary judgment stage especially, there is absolutely no reason why we have to bring direct evidence that Ms. Gedman's lies were predicated upon a racial bias. Okay? Because the lie itself will allow a jury to infer an improper motive. Now, at trial, if we get to trial and that's all that we have, then, you know, it may not be the strongest case. I mean, the jury may ultimately decide to believe Ms. Gedman instead of Dr. Rayford. But the district court was not in a position to make that credibility assessment. And the district court was not in a position to require us to prove her racial discrimination, her purposeful intent to discriminate against Dr. Rayford. All we had to do at this point, according to the Shager court, according to every court that I've actually, even according to St. Mary's, which is a Supreme Court case, and Reeves, which is another Supreme Court case, is establish the four McDonnell-Douglas elements and that the reason provided by the employer was in fact false. That's enough to get it to the jury. And so that's why we believe at that point that summary judgment should not have been entered in favor of Wexford at this point. The judge should have allowed it to go on to the jury. And since you jumped ahead to all of my points, my secondary points, I'm really done at this point. Right. Unless you all have any other questions, I'll be more than happy to turn it over to Wexford's counsel.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kellogg.
Thank you.
Ms. Baker-Seal.
Thank you. May it please the court and counsel. I believe that your honors have hit the ball on the head with this, your questions, your honor, because this is exactly what this case is about. The fundamental flaw with the plaintiff's reasoning is that he equates Gedman's, quote, lie with pretext. It is our position as the defendant Wexford that the plaintiff must come forward with some type of evidence of pretext. In this case, the only evidence whatsoever on their issue of pretext is Dr. Rayford's simple denial that he made these statements to Ms. Gedman. And it's important to keep in mind that Ms. Gedman was not the decision maker. So even though he comes forward with the denial, he has absolutely no evidence that Dr. Lindquist was aware that the conduct was disputed. There's certainly no evidence that either Dr. Lundquist or Ms. Gedman operated with any racial animus.
Well, here it's very clear that Gedman, it was a false report she gave to Lundquist, and certainly Lundquist had, you know, hired blacks after the whole decision not to rehire Rayford, but counsel poses an interesting question. This is not a direct evidence case. I mean, what evidence could he show when it was a falsehood on her part to prove it? He would argue that we can draw an inference that it had to be racially motivated. How do you respond to that?
I think that the guidance has been given by this court's previous decisions, and there's a number of ways that they could give evidence of an inference of discrimination. They could have come forward with other evidence, statistical evidence. They could have come forward with evidence about Dr. Lundquist's decision making. There's absolutely no evidence in this record about Ms. Gedman or Dr. Lundquist's decision making or the communications between the two of them. There's a plethora of ways that they could have questioned Dr. Lundquist's decision and his ultimate authority in making that decision, but there's simply nothing in the record other than Dr. Rayford's simple denial that it didn't happen. I would point this court in making your decision to two important decisions, the Billups case and the McGowan versus John Deere case. I think both of these cases highlight our point, and our point being that the plaintiff is required to present evidence of pretext. Yes, it's a different analysis than the direct burden method, but they have to present some evidence of pretext. Ultimately, under these cases, the Billups and the McGowan case, it is the plaintiff's responsibility to show pretext. That is, they must show that the decision offered by Wexford is unworthy of credence. And there is absolutely no factual evidence to support that conclusion. If every plaintiff would come forward and simply deny that a conduct happened, then summary judgment would not be allowed to be used in employment context. They have to come forward with more. And it's not simply that the underlying reason for the termination was a lie. They have to show that Dr. Lundquist's decision was false. And it wasn't false. All the evidence shows is that he believed what Ms. Gedman had told him, and he relied on that. And it was a good reason not to bring Dr. Rayford back in a position of management. The reason why Dr. Lundquist chose not to bring him back was because he had expressed dissatisfaction with Wexford's management. That's what Dr. Lundquist believed when he made that decision. And there's been no evidence put forward by a plaintiff to discount that. Just briefly, Your Honors, the two cases relied on by plaintiff, primarily the Shager case and the Cottage case, give examples of additional evidence that can be used to show pretext. For example, the Shager case, there was evidence of remarks made by the supervisor. That was an age case, and there was evidence of derogatory age comments made by. Not direct evidence of discrimination related to the decision, but other peripheral comments made. In that same case, there was questionable conduct of the supervisor. The supervisor had set the plaintiff up to fail, had given him a sales territory that was not a good one, and had set him up to fail in that way. In addition, the Cottage case also highlights this point. In that case, there was concrete evidence of the discriminatory animus. In that case, it was actually a First Amendment case, and the decision maker was anti-union, and there was specific evidence in the record to show that. And it was through those sources of evidence that the plaintiff was able to overcome the pretext argument and was granted an opportunity to go to trial. So unless there's any questions, I'll just conclude by saying that we believe the district court's decision was correct, that the plaintiff is required to show some evidence, any evidence of pretext, and he's failed to do that in this case, and we'd ask you to affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you. Counsel, fine briefs, great argument. We'll take the case under advisement.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I'm sorry. You had a couple minutes left. You have 4 minutes left. I'm sorry. No, go ahead. It's up to you.
I don't need to use it all. I just wanted to make a couple of points.
It's your choice.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have 4 minutes.
Yeah. The issue of pretext. Pretext is a lie. And she says, well, we needed to come forward with evidence of pretext. Well, we did through the summary judgment standard. Okay? Whatever she said, Ms. Gedman, I think what we have to realize is that this is not a traditional case where somebody got fired because the employer thought, well, this guy's not a very good worker, you know, he's always late, blah, 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 blah. This all comes down to one single phone conversation. Okay? It's just one phone conversation. And Ms. Gedman says that Dr. Rayford disparaged the company. Dr. Rayford, and she said so during her with one of her affidavits. Now, Dr. Rayford, on the other hand, was actually deposed by defendant's counsel, and he disputed all of that under oath. This is your classic he said, she said kind of situation. I mean, there's no other kind of independent evidence that we can bring forward and say that Gedman was lying other than the fact that our guy was on the other side of the phone, and he says that he didn't say those kind of things. So it's a unique case in that perspective. Again, just because Dr. Lundquist was not on the phone doesn't make him ultimately liable or the company ultimately liable, all right? Because it's quite clear that Gedman's lies can be imputed to him. We cannot set up liability shields for these companies to make these standard termination decisions or refusal to hire decisions and set up committees that are completely ignorant of the circumstances in order for the company to avoid liability. For these reasons, and for the reasons set forth in the Supreme Court decisions of St. Mary's versus Hicks and Reeves versus Sanderson, we respectfully request that this court overturn the court's decision below and allow the case to go to trial. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. Case will be taken under advisement.